Hello, once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We talk automotive maintenance and repair this afternoon with our old buddy Gordon Fricke, owner and operator of Barber & Fricke Automotive Incorporated, an independent repair, auto body, towing, and used car facility in Hoosick Falls, New York. Gordon has been in the game for many, many years now. He knows what he's talking about. We love having him here. Give us a call now, 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can also check in online. You can visit the Vox Pop section of our website, wamc.org/voxpop, to see all the ways to get in touch with us on the World Wide Web. All right, Gordon, welcome back. It's still summer driving season, and boy, the traffic has been ridiculous going to vacation spots.
Yes, I can attest to that. We were on the Mass Pike last Friday late afternoon, and it went from about 70 miles an hour to zero in 5 seconds.
And you know, we went in New England, too. We went up to Maine, and there were sections where we would hit traffic that was 12 miles an hour, and then it would be 45 for a little bit, and then back down. And there was no construction. There was no accident. We could not figure out what was going on.
Same thoughts went through our minds. I'm saying there must be a bad accident. Something's going on up here. Because
right.
We went literally from 70 to zero. I was on the brakes hard, and I'm saying, I hope nobody hits us from behind. I even put the four-ways on.
Yeah.
And then we sat there and sat there and sat there. Probably lost an hour.
Oh, that's always fun on the way to a vacation. It's even more fun on the way home when you just want to get home.
Yeah, you've had it, and you don't want another minute in the car.
And, you know, with the hot weather, you and I were talking about this in the break, driving in the hot weather, not all that lovely on a car.
No, it's hard on under hood components, among other things, because the temperatures under the hood in those conditions can get extremely hot. I mean, you're pushing 150 degrees or more under the hood.
Yeah, and you've talked me off the ledge many, many times about my car, and I went on a 700-mile over 2 days, 700 miles, and I called you when I got back, and I said, you know, I got to check coolant level, and I'm really concerned. He said, well, it's been 100. Just put a little coolant in and it'll be okay.
A little bit evaporated off into the atmosphere.
Right you are. Well, let's go right to the phones at 800-348-2551. Robert in Catskill, you're on with Gordon Fricke.
Good afternoon, Gordon. You're right about the highway with the mask. Of course, around Palmer, it always seems to slow down.
That was one of the spots, yeah.
And there's no reason ever.
Yeah.
Anyway, I didn't call about that. one of my caddies had a little boo-boo happen to it on the Turbo 400. And where the transmission pan hits the bottom casing of the tranny, it got a little boogered. I bottomed out somewhere. And it's a low rider with a big block.
Yep.
Anyway, what happened was I tried getting an aluminum transmission pan with the Chrysler Black RTV goop, and it didn't hold at all. What's your recommendation? I don't want to pull the tranny, because pulling the tranny in that car, it's a 57 Caddy. We require pulling the engine and it together. Because it has the X-frame, it was a modified car.
Yep.
So would JB Weld be a good thing, or is there something else you could think of?
So, Robert, what is actually, is there a crack or?
Yes, there is. At the front, the front screw is totally adulterated.
Okay.
I tried a nut and bolt. It didn't work,
okay.
Even with the black goop.
So it hit so hard that it not only bashed your pan, but it did some damage to the transmission where the pan bolts up. Is that what you're saying? Okay.
I was actually in a drag race, and I hit a bad spot down at bottom.
I think you were on the right track with the epoxy, and JB Weld is a brand. And if used correctly, the stuff is phenomenal. And what you're going to want to do, though, is if you have a leak occurring, the epoxy's never going to stick and never going to work. So you've got to get that transmission drained and drip-free. And that area wants to be perfectly clean, and you can spray the area you're going to epoxy with a contact cleaner or something that doesn't leave any residue when it dries. And rough
like,
the air,
like a CRC brake cleaner or something, a barber's brake cleaner.
Actually, that does leave some residue. Go to if you like the CRC brand, they have a contact.
No, I just
cleaner.
Know from the store.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah, get a contact cleaner. Comes in the same big can, and it cleans up the surface that you're going to either treat or put some type of bonding agent on, and it doesn't leave any residue, so it's going to do its best job by sticking that way.
Okay.
But, yeah, definitely try that. I mean, don't you know.
Yeah, just let it be on the lift overnight, let it totally drain, then just clean up.
Exactly. If you've got the time, which I'm sure you do, because I know you got a bunch of other cars you've called in before.
Yeah, once before, the same car, believe
yes,
it or not.
Yes, I know
my headache car.
This was the heater core car, wasn't it?
Yes, and that's been addressed.
What a memory.
Excellent.
Yes, I don't normally call in because I do a lot of my own stuff, but this 57 Caddy is one big headache. You know, it's a modified car.
When you say big, you mean big. About 5,000 pounds worth?
Yeah. It's 4240.
Oh, that's not bad.
But it does run a 14-second quarter. It's, you know, for a big car.
Now, are you drag racing on the highway, or is it on a closed course?
Well, we're not going to talk about that, are we?
All right, sir. Well, good for you.
I'm one of those old guys that still enjoys the streets.
That's all right, nice, sir. Hey, Robert, thanks for the call. Let's go to Deborah in Marbletown. Deborah.
Hi. I'm not sure if this is pertinent, but I am a social worker, and I've worked with a number of people up in my area who have lost their cars because they can't repair them anymore. They've just gone to dust. And I wondered if you had any idea of where I could direct these people to try and find a decent used car that they might be able to afford.
It's tough to mention brand to actual stores. It's really not what we're allowed to do, but you could maybe give some general information.
Yeah, sure. I mean, that is a very difficult segment because everybody would like an inexpensive car.
Yes,
I understand. And nowadays, inexpensive is in the thousands, not in the hundreds, where 30, 40 years ago, you could get so-called beater cars for in the hundreds. But that's a good question. I mean, if you search the want ads and the Craigslist and all that, the only thing there is you got to do a lot of legwork yourself, and you've got to do some checking on your own and hope that you're buying something that isn't doctored up and full of problems. So I can't give you a good answer because, you know, if you go to dealers, yes, they have to support what they're selling.
Right, of course.
And to find my idea is try to find a not a massive car lot or dealership that's just pumping out as many cars as volume. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Try to find somebody that's kind of smaller volume, off the beaten path, that maybe has a repair shop connected to them, because at least you know there's some mechanics and some support there. If you just buy a car from the side of the road or from somebody in a trailer or a little shack,
They have
no support system. So if you have problems, it's going to be a shuffle.
And you know, I don't know if I can actually use the name, but there's a brand of internet site, and maybe it's a .org. I don't remember, but you go to this site and you can check the entire history on the car.
So yes, I am aware of that. I just was wondering if there were any, you know, ideas where dealers put cars. I don't know. I think I'm in fantasy land about hoping to be able to save these people.
Well, it is a tough thing, yeah.
It's a noble effort, though. Thank you.
But that would be my recommendations.
Deborah, thanks a lot. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. And let's see here. It's Tara in Tilson. Tara, you're on.
Hi, how are you?
Hi.
Okay, I have a Ford Taurus, and I'm having an air conditioner problem.
Okay.
It's not getting very cold. Now, we get, like, the refill for Freon in the can, and it read that it was full in the car. And then we changed the motor, and that's great, and that's working. Sometimes I have to tap on it with, like, a wrench to get it to go, but, hey, it goes. And the fuses are fine, but it's not getting as cold as it used to get before it broke.
Okay. So the air is blowing, and you're setting it to air conditioning, but the air coming out of the vents is not very cold anymore?
It goes from cool to lit. It's not quite. It won't cool the car.
Okay.
It won't quite get to the back seat.
And we've spoke about this before. They do make these little homeowner kits where you can, quote, recharge your system. And if
we did that.
Yeah, as I know you did. And if your system was completely empty before you did that, there's a good chance that there's a lot of air in the system.
Well, actually, when we went to do it, it read that it was full, so we didn't even, the first kit didn't even go in.
So it said that they had adequate pressure already?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think what you're going to have to do, unless you can live without the air till fall, is get it somewhere where they can completely evacuate it and run a test on it and refill it to the correct amount, and then see what the efficiency is of it. If it's cooling better, there could be a whole bunch of reasons why you're not getting cooling. It's more than just the refrigerant in there. It could be the blend door that mixes the warm and cold air. I think it's out of your realm at this point, as far as do-it-yourself, and it's probably
got to go
somewhere.
Well, I have a guy that does everything. He did the head gasket, and he did everything that's broken on the car so far. He's fixed, but he can't figure out exactly why the air conditioner's not getting cold.
Okay, yeah.
So I'll pass the information along about the blend door.
Sure.
All right, great.
Okay.
Tara,
okay,
thanks.
You have a good day. Thanks for the help.
We appreciate it. We're going to take a break here at 1-800-348-2551. Back with Gordon Fricke coming up.
Support comes from HMT at the Spa Little Theater, announcing their 29th season beginning October 11th with the musical comedy The Drowsy Chaperone in the Saratoga Spa State Park. HomemadeTheater.org. Charles Padula, DDS, Union Avenue, Schenectady. Providing bonded composites and air abrasion decay removal, which helps to eliminate needles and drills. PaduladDDS.com. The Nature Conservancy's Adirondack Chapter, working to protect ecologically important lands and waters of the Adirondacks for nature and people. Nature.org/Adirondacks. Berkshire Co-op Market, Great Barrington, Massachusetts, a community-owned natural grocery store dedicated to sustainable agriculture, the local economy, and the environment. Berkshire.coop. And Curtis Lumber, providing kitchens, baths, doors and windows, paint, flooring, and more since 1890, with 21 locations in New York and Northern Vermont. CurtisLumber.com.
one 800 348 2551 is the number. It's Vox Pop. Gordon Fricke's here in the middle of a summer driving season. I guess it's almost coming to a close, but we drive in the autumn quite a lot as well. Kyle and Colony. Kyle, you're up.
Hi, guys. Ray, you're the man. You're one of my favorites over there.
Oh, thank you.
Just wanted to get that in.
Appreciate it.
I have a 2004 Acura TSX that I live in an apartment complex, and it sits outside all day. Excuse me. And some squirrels have managed to get up into the engine compartment.
Oh, boy.
And have eaten the hood liner. So my question is, do I need to replace that? And secondly, there's some kind of on the bulkhead, if you will, that is way less accessible that they've gotten to as well.
And that's also like a material, like a insulating material also on the bulkhead?
I'm not sure if it's insulating or if it's sound deadening, it's got the same type of
consistency. They love that stuff. And we've opened up so many hoods and find so much stuff like that torn apart and eaten up. The one that's lining the hood is, the car can live without that. What that's okay. for, a lot of it is what you said earlier, sound deadening. So when the hood is shut, and an Acura, is a somewhat higher end of a car, so the engineers want to make these cars nice and quiet. You don't hear the engine clattering and making all kinds of noise. So you can ditch the one under the hood. The one that goes between the engine and the passenger compartment, again, it's sound deadening primarily. Older cars didn't have that. Some cars have the deadening material on the inside. If you can't get to it, just leave it. Unless they're dragging stuff all over the engine or the exhaust, you might want to get that vacuumed up and cleaned. But you can live without those things, really.
Okay. So it won't, and unless there's some pretty thick stuff that's hanging on, like the exhaust or something, it's not going to be a fire hazard or anything.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Exactly. I would get rid of any pieces that might be hanging down onto hot parts of the engine.
Yeah.
And look over your wiring, because they do like to gnaw the insulation from the wires. If you see any bare wires, you'll want to get those re-insulated so you don't have a short problem.
Now, theoretically, enough dead squirrels would deaden the sound as well, right?
That's right.
Okay. Kyle, thanks.
That would make my dad happy, too. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. Let's go to Frank in Utica. Frank, you're up. Frank, you
on? Hey. Yes, I'm here. Good afternoon.
Hi.
So, enjoy the show, and I love when both of you are on together. This is awesome.
Thanks.
So, I need some advice. I'm looking for a specific used car for my wife, and I've kind of settled on, in the 2007-2008 range of Nissan Pathfinder. And everything I read superficially sounds really good, high ratings and all that. And as I drill down into the information, Gordon, what I find is kind of a trend towards maybe there's an issue with transmissions and transmission coolers with those vehicles. And I guess two-part question would be, first, is that true? And then secondly, if it is there a way to separate out the lemons from the limes?
Yeah. The information you're getting, is it being specific as to what they're having problems with? In other words, are the transmissions just flat out failing, or is it shifting quality, or people just don't like how they operate?
I'm going to try to recall what I had read, which seemed to be a pretty consistent pattern of the something to do with the radiator lines or transmission coolant lines failing and thus causing a catastrophic failure.
Okay. Yeah.
Transmission.
Yeah. Here's what that's all about. The transmission fluid gets cooled up front by the radiator and or sometimes in an auxiliary cooler. So the fluid gets pumped through steel lines from the transmission to the front of the car, and those lines are susceptible to corrosion. And when they rust and finally rust thin and through, you develop a pretty nasty transmission fluid leak. And if you drive the car too long that way, the fluid level will go down to a point where the transmission is slipping and not operating correctly. And yes, it can have serious damage after that. If you're looking at a used Pathfinder or a vehicle of that vintage, try to get one that's as corrosion and rust-free as possible. And you're going to really need to get under it and look at all those lines. And maybe if traveling a little bit is not a problem, get a little south of here. And you don't have to go that far. I get a lot of cars from the Connecticut, Rhode Island, southern New England area. They seem to use much less salt.
Oh, really?
And those cars, when I bring those cars back, and of course I'm looking at them prior to buying them, but they're very, very rust-free in a lot of cases. And you wouldn't think just that little bit of travel would make the difference. So, I mean, that's an option for you to seek one out because they're good vehicles. They really are.
Mm-hmm. All right, Frank.
Okay, very good.
Frank,
thank
you very much. We appreciate the call. Always nice to hear from Utica as well. 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Let's go to Jan in Ludlow. Jan, you're up.
Good afternoon. I am hoping you can help me. I have a lovely 2000 Jeep Cherokee. We've had 5 or 6 years, probably 6. And I know they are notorious for bad air conditioners. And we have spent thousands. We've had 2 condensers put in. I heard you talking to the woman earlier about the blender door. My husband's replaced that. And I'm hoping we can avoid having to replace the evaporator.
That's a nasty job in most cases.
Expensive.
Yeah, it is. That's because of the way they're located. Has it been diagnosed as needing an evaporator?
Well, first they thought it was the condenser, so they replaced that. That was over 1,000. And then they said the condenser went bad, so at least that was under warranty. And then another guy that we took it to said there may be a leak in one of the pipes in front of the condenser, and he put dye in.
Yep.
And he said he saw some dye come out, leak out, so he replaced that. But it seems everyone, and that lasted about 2 months, 3 months. And now it's gone again, and every once in a while we have to put one of those in, you know, the ones you buy at the store.
Yeah.
We put it in ourselves, and it lasts about a month. But we've had this diagnosed all the way from Massachusetts to Arizona, and everyone seems to have a different idea. And everything they do seems to last about a month, and then we're back where we started.
Well, what you have, of course, is a very small, well, not very small, but a leak that initially doesn't show up as being poor air conditioning output until some time has passed.
Mm-hmm.
And the older the vehicle, sometimes the more prone they are to leaking at various areas. And an air conditioning system is very hard to completely pinpoint sometimes because there are so many connections and hoses and bends and components, and riding around out in a car is the worst place for an air conditioner. I mean, they like to stay put.
I don't blame them.
So the dye is very important because the dye goes around the whole system, and where it seeps out will show up. It's a fluorescent material that if you put some yellow glasses on with a infrared light or an ultraviolet light, you'll see it. So I think if it's had dye in it, somebody should go over the whole system with the glasses and see if there's any leaks that you can see. And then if the evaporator is a suspect, that you can't really see it without taking a billion things apart.
Boy.
So you need a leak detector to sniff the air coming out of it. So it's not 100% pinpointable sometimes. So I know what you're going through. But that's...
And my husband belongs to a Jeep forum online. And, you know, we're not the only ones. I think the Cherokees are just infamous for having a problem with their air conditioner.
Yeah, and that could be. I don't see that many of the Cherokees around. We see a lot of Grand Cherokees, but they were a good vehicle. But I can't tell you that I see any one area that always needs replacing. So I think it's back to the drawing board and check out to see if that dye leaked out.
Okay, I will do that. Thank you very much.
Jen, thank you very much. It's Vox Pop on WAMC, our car expert and truck. Gordon Fricke is here. Let's go to Weston in Albany. Weston, you're on.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
I've got a 2000 Mazda Proje LX. Unfortunately, I flipped it a couple months ago, and the A-frame was bent, you know, a couple windows smashed, whatever. So I can't drive the car anymore, which is too bad because it has very low mileage, only 66,000 miles. I've still got all these parts that are potentially worth a lot of money, airbags, you know, engine, the doors all still open and shut. I mean, what is the best way to get the most money for this car?
Well, there's a couple of ways of doing it. You could call around and see what salvage company will pay the most for the car in the condition that it's in. You know, junkyards, salvage yards, crushers, that kind of thing. And if the car has alloy wheels and the exhaust system is intact, primarily the catalytic converter, it's worth the most in scrap. And it could be anywhere to $200-$400, depending on what scrap metal prices are doing. The other thing you could do is advertise the vehicle in the condition that it's in and try to sell it. And you could do that on Craigslist or the want ads or eBay, things like that. Then you may get a lot of people that want a door or they want the engine, or if you've got the room to hang on to it and kind of play private junkyard.
Yeah. Why don't you just buy another one and then you have all the parts you need?
Yeah, I wish I could do that, but I already got a hand-me-down.
Okay.
Well, thank you very much.
Yep. Weston, thank you for the call. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. And we go to Cooperstown. It's Sal. You're up.
Hey, how are you today?
Good.
You got a really neat show. I'm I'm impressed. I was driving through looking for a radio station, and I found it, and I'm fascinated by it. So,
thank
good
you.
Job. I have a question about air conditioning, as long as everyone else is bringing those up. I have a 2008 Acura MDX, and sometimes the air conditioning works on it, and sometimes it doesn't. The times it's not working, what I'll do is I'll keep pressing the air conditioning button, you know, on and off, and occasionally that works to get the air conditioning going. Other times what I'll do is I've noticed that higher engine revs, sometimes that causes it to kick in and work, which is crazy, but it does. So I've actually, you know, had it not working, and I put it into neutral, and I've revved it at like 5,000-6,000 RPM. And occasionally that makes it work. All of a sudden it'll kick in and get cold. I took it to a mechanic, and he looked at it, and he checked the Freon, and he said, no, you're full of Freon. Maybe we'll just run some other tests if you have time. And I didn't have the time at the time. I was in a hurry, so I just thought I would, as long as everyone else is asking questions, ask you that.
Okay,
sure. Here's what we find sometimes that the answers your conditions here. The clutch on the air conditioning compressor It's called an electromechanical clutch. It's an electric magnet. So when the system says it's time to get the compressor going for cold air, it engages the compressor by means of a magnetic clutch.
Mm.
That magnetic clutch, sometimes when it gets hot, and if it's got some wear, it will engage fine cold and work for a while, and then when things are really hot under the hood, the clutch will not re-engage the compressor, even though the system is asking it to. And what tends to happen is, from clutch wear, there's too much of a gap between the magnet and what it's trying to click together. And I have actually had vehicles with conditions like yours. Get it in the shop. Air conditioning works great. You let it run for a half hour, go do other things. All of a sudden, you walk over to the car, and the compressor's not turning.
Ah.
You go in the car. Everything is still asking to come on. And I did a really crude thing one day. I took a long hammer handle, and I wouldn't get sucked into the belt and ground up. I just pushed on the clutch with this hammer handle, and pow, it engaged, and it kind of spun the wooden handle away. And that compressor stayed engaged the whole time until the system said it was time to shut off because it had reached the right temperature, and the compressor wouldn't re-engage. I put the stick on it, and it engaged again. So this guy needed a compressor.
So was the heat expanding it so that
Ray, you're getting good.
What about a stronger magnet?
It's not the strength of the magnet. The gap got too wide.
But, I mean, couldn't you compensate for that with a stronger magnet?
Well, you don't have room because that magnet's in a confined area, and it's an electromagnet. You remember making those in
up the voltage,
man.
Up the voltage.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can do it that way.
So that, I mean, that's a possibility, Sal, with yours. It could be that the clutch is getting tired.
Okay.
So that's one thing. The other thing could be a control problem, and that requires some serious diagnostics.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks very much.
Hey, Sal, thanks a lot. Always nice to hear from Cooperstown, too. That's a great neck of the woods. Let's go to Ed in Slingerlands. Ed.
Hello there. Can you hear me?
Sure thing.
Hi. Thanks for doing what you guys are doing, and going to stick with the transmission theme. I've got an 02 Honda Accord, and it's very drivable, but I notice a lot of kind of it revs up a little bit, then clunks into gear, and it also kind of has some funny shift points, it seems. But I did talk to a transmission specialist, and he says he wants to give it a diagnostic, and that's all well and good. But what my main question is about, I've heard of, it's an 02, so I know it's past its 10-year, but it's only got 77,000 on it. And I guess I've heard at times that Honda's authorized certain warranties if in certain cases. Do you have any info on that, or any good ways of finding anything out about that?
What you're referring to, I believe, Honda had a big problem around 1999 to 2001, Odysseys and Pilots. And they had a lot of transmission problems. And it was because of an oil passage that wasn't adequate, wasn't getting enough oil to a certain part of the transmission, so it wore it out prematurely. Honda recognized the problem and extended the warranty on the transmission. And I don't remember what the extension was, but it wasn't on the cars that I'm aware of. And I think because of the age, you would have timed out, age-wise, even though your miles are quite low. But the transmission in your 02 Accord is very different from those from the minivans and the Pilots. So what I would do, of course, has anybody made sure that the fluid is at the right level?
Well, I had it changed at a, Jiffy something another, and it looks clean still. It was within the last couple of years. That changed nothing. And the level, it's tough to tell. It's got a, those two little marks are so close together, and it has to be warmed up but not running, I guess, in that particular, according to the manual. And So I was a little leery about adding some because the manual really specifies use this, don't use anything else but. And,
That's true. Honda did.
But just to interrupt real quick, I did get a code, D4 flashing with a check engine light a couple times, and the guy at the shop said, yeah, that sounds like there is something going on with the transmission itself.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely, you know, the first thing you always want to do is make sure the fluid level is at the correct level and the fluid's clean, and then check for any codes because it sometimes, and a lot of times, can be a control problem and not an actual physical problem in the transmission.
Which would be better.
Right. Yeah, definitely.
Right.
So all right, Ed, we got to take a break here.
Terrific. But thanks very much, guys. Have a great day.
Thanks very much. And our guest is Gordon Fricke of Barber & Fricke Automotive, Incorporated in Hoosick Falls. The number to call is 800-348-2551. Have one free line at the moment, 1-800-348-2551.
Support comes from Joyelle's Jewelers, Del Mar, New York, specializing in custom jewelry and repair, laser welding, designer jewelry, and gifts. JoyellesJewelers.com. The Alternative Baker, Rosendale, artisan, all-butter baked goods made from scratch, handcrafted lemon velvet cakes and egg sandwiches daily, where taste is everything. Lemoncakes.com. Washington County Tourism, announcing the Washington County Fair today through Sunday, spotlighting the county's agricultural heritage with exhibits, farm museum, and more. WashingtonNYCounty.com. Careers in Transition, LLC, Albany, Dr. Tom Denham, providing individual career guidance, testing, job strategies, interview preparation, resume, and cover letter writing. CareersInTransitionLLC.com. And the Arkell Museum at Canajoharie, presenting an American in Venice, James McNeil Whistler and his legacy, with etchings by Whistler, John Mayer, and more. ArkellMuseum.org.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Gordon Fricke is our guest, our automotive show. We do it once a month or so. It's 2:41 on a Thursday afternoon. And, Gordon, this is one from the, I guess this is an email here. I'm not sure exactly where it came from, but somebody handed it to me. It says, please keep my name off the air. Thank you. Great show. All right, Anonymous. All right. So far, so good. If you misbehave, we'll say your name. It says, I have a 2003 Acura TL. It's in great shape, and I'd like to keep the car for at least another 6 to 10 years. When I have the oil changed at the Acura dealer, they put a next oil change due for 7,000 miles. Isn't that going too long to have an oil change? I thought it should be every 3,000 miles. I've been told it has a VTEC engine. You and I have talked about this countless times.
Yes. Yep. Yeah, we do get that question a lot, and it's a very good, valid question because oil change intervals are sometimes misconstrued or misinterpreted when they give you these wide oil change intervals.
Yeah.
6, 7, 7,500 miles, 10,000 miles. The fine print basically is under ideal, quote, non-severe operating conditions. And that rules out the Northeast because we have season changes. We have hot, we have cold, we have snow, we have dust, we have everything. So that takes us out of the ideal category.
Does anybody have ideal conditions?
Southern California, although it's pretty hot, but you know
they have stoplights and everything too,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, you're right. So I mean, what they're saying is if you commute to work, let's say you live an hour away,
right?
Start the car, hop in it, drive a nice easy hour, shut it off for half the day, go to lunch, whatever. Those are ideal conditions because
yeah.
The car totally warms up. You're not abusing it. You're not idling like crazy. It's not stop and go. My idea for the most part is to cut the intervals in half. So if BMW says do it every 10, I recommend every 5. And you're only doing yourself a favor if you plan on keeping the car because you're not going to be the guy that suffers from the sludged up oil passages,
yeah.
The valve starvation, the variable valve timing system that plugs up, and all that stuff. And at that point, it's too late. So, yes, I cut them in half.
So, and it can't hurt.
No, and a lot of people used to do every 3,000 miles on conventional motor oil.
Yeah.
That's still a good idea on non-synthetic oil, stop-and-go driving, you know, quote, not normal. They call it severe, but it really isn't that severe.
Yeah, well, I use the, I don't know if it's partially synthetic or the full synthetic now, but I do it every 3. What difference does it make?
Unless you've got a car that takes a lot of oil and takes a lot of time to change. You know, if it's an 8-quart system and you have to remove splash shields underneath it and the filter's in a horrible spot.
Yeah.
Sometimes those oil changes with full synthetic oil and a very expensive filter because it's a European car or whatever, yeah, they're $80-$90. But
yes, I know it well. All right, let's go back to the phones at 800-348-2551. Bonnie in Mass, you're on.
Hello, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My daughter has a 1994 Toyota Camry XLE 6-cylinder with air conditioning. I've been told it has an oil-driven fan. And about a month ago, 6 weeks ago, it decided it wanted to overheat. So the first thing we did was change the thermostat because it could have been the original one and it could have been locked and closed. And that seemed to help a little bit. And then we had the radiator drained and checked and refilled that with new antifreeze. And then we found out the power steering fluid was really low, so we filled that. And all those things seem to help a little bit, but every once in a while it still wants to spike into the red zone. What could be causing that?
When does it go into the red zone? At slow speeds or at idle or going down the road at 50?
Going uphill, typically.
So if you're asking for power and load, that's when you're running too hot.
Yes, and you can actually hear it come on, and it almost sounds a bit labored.
So you're hearing the fan spinning up? You can hear the fans running? Okay. How many miles are on the car?
Probably 170,000-something.
What you may have is a radiator that has lost its efficiency to cool the engine, and that happens by deposits getting in the core of the radiator where all the coolant flows, and you can't clean it or flush it. You won't get these things out. And again, I'm speculating because I'm not, you know, seeing the car, but usually when the fans work, the coolant is full and clean, the thermostat is known good, and you only run hot under loads when you're going up long hills or the car full of people on the hottest day of the year. It's usually the radiator's ability to cool has decreased to that point. And it's not that it's leaking. It's not that it's plugged. It just can't take the heat away.
You need a new radiator?
New radiator is it.
Okay, one other question. Being an oil-driven fan, what kind of sensor prompts it to come on as opposed to, is it still have an electric sensor?
Well, it's measuring the temperature of the coolant, and that is asking the hydraulic fluid. It's coming from your power steering pump. That's the fluid that it uses, and it's just it's directing that power steering fluid to go and run the fans, and so it's working just like an electric switch, but it's not turning on electricity; it's turning on fluid flow.
Mm. All right.
Oh, okay. So then it couldn't be the fan assembly itself with a bearing that's wearing out or something.
Here's the way to do a quick test on the fans. At idle, turn the air conditioner on and make sure those fans power up and pull air through the radiator. And that tells you pretty much, other than them coming on at high temps, that they're capable of working.
Okay, thanks for your help. Okay.
Bonnie, thanks a lot. Now, is this a situation where they didn't flush the radiator enough in the history of the 1994 vehicle?
Well, yeah, that's partly true because there are intervals of coolant changes throughout the life of the car. And a lot of those get severely overlooked.
Yeah.
And the fluid, then the coolant gets nasty, and it leaves deposits all over everything. Not only the radiator, but all over the inside of the engine and everything. And yes, if it was changed at regular intervals, she may not be having this problem. Probably wouldn't be.
Interesting.
But that's what I think it is.
Let's go to Carl in Albany. Carl, you're on with Gordon Fricke.
Hi, folks. How are you?
Good.
I have a 2005 Ford Escape Hybrid that I purchased used about 2 months ago. I get this really annoying error message saying that the right rear door is ajar. It's not on all the time, but it's on most of the time, and it means that you can't leave the dome lights on because they'll stay on all the time and wear the battery down. And occasionally it'll think it's closed and it'll think it's open again. And then of course that causes a beep, an alarm or whatever. Have you had this problem with other, I did a search on the internet and it seemed like Other Ford vehicles seem to have this problem.
Yeah, it's not that uncommon of a situation, and I'm sure that the door in question is always shut tight. You know, I'm not asking a stupid question, but I want to make sure that the door is not, when you find that's the case, the door didn't just pop slightly open. In the door latches are micro switches, and those micro switches tell the system that the door is either open or shut, and they're subject to getting crudded up and sticky and giving and not completely shutting or telling the computer that the door is either open or shut. Quick and easy thing to do: get some penetrating oil, maybe WD-40 or one of those brands with a straw on it, and spray the heck out of those door latches. And I'm talking about the part that opens up with the door, and there's a little mechanism that turns in there.
Yes, right. I realize this one. I mean, some of the other cars I've had an actual button, a switch, and this one does not.
Yeah,
the sensor must be inside the door.
It's in the latch. It still has it, but it's not visible anymore. It's a micro switch. So spray those up, lube them up heavily, and then open and shut the door dozens of times. So that switch, you're opening and shutting it, and that'll get that lubricant in there, and more than likely this will solve your problem. And do all the doors, and you can also do the tailgate.
So you think it's that rather than, say, a loose connection or something
right.
like that?
No, it's more than likely related to that micro switch, and to prevent you from having to change that latch, try this first.
Right. I mean, I'm not sure exactly how expensive it is.
Yeah, this will probably take care of it. It's common on those vehicles.
Nice.
All right. Very good. And one other hopefully quick question. This is the first hybrid that I've had. I don't know if you had any experience with this particular car or not, but I noticed that it has two different reservoirs for coolant. I assume one for the electric and one for the gas engine. I don't know. Does it use a specific kind of antifreeze, or would any newer varieties of antifreeze work?
Yeah, if you need to top it, generally what I'll do, particularly with a vehicle like that, is use a global coolant that mixes and works in everything. It's usually gold colored or yellow, and that's what's in your car. Yours is like a goldish yellowish liquid.
Yes, it is.
And that'll blend in with that stuff just fine.
Okay.
Well, I'm more concerned about actually, like, if and when I change it, because I believe I'm only the second owner, and it has over 100,000 miles, and I question whether it's ever been changed or not.
Yeah, I would refer to the owner's manual, and then if you go by the global stuff, just make sure it says that it's Ford approved, but I can almost guarantee you it is.
Okay.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. Yeah,
thanks a lot. That brings up a question about Dexcool.
Yeah.
So you can go to any auto parts store and get coolant that is supposedly for every kind of cooling system.
Yes.
And yet, you can also buy the Dexcool approved stuff. Now, I get petrified, and I get the Dexcool approved. Am I wasting my money?
Not really. The Dexcool was a General Motors derived requirement.
Right.
And it's a pinkish-orangish color.
Yeah.
Orange almost. And GM decided to use that because they thought it was longer life and better, and in some cases it wasn't that good. It tended to sometimes to goo up the heater cores.
Oh, fabulous.
But if you're topping up a vehicle that requires Dexcool, those globals blend in, and they've got all the coverage you need. Yeah,
okay.
Sure.
1-800-348-2551. Okay, here's one. It's from Tom. Whenever I take my car into a dealer for brake work, they recommend turning the rotors when getting new pads. Also, they recommend a service on the brake fluid, drain and replenish. If I take the car to a private shop, they say not to turn rotors and that the brake fluid is a closed system and shouldn't need changing unless there is damage.
Okay. Both good questions. Brake fluid is a liquid, and we've talked about this before, has hygroscopic properties. So that means it's dying to take on moisture.
Okay.
So, yes, it is in theory a closed system, but not really, because air is getting by those little seals in the cover on the master cylinder, and every point where there's an absolute possibility, a teeny bit of air is going to get in, and the air has moisture in it. The brake fluid loves the moisture, so it's absorbing it. And what that does is two things. It lowers the boiling point of the brake fluid.
Mm-hmm.
So if you get on the brakes on a 100-degree day going down 6-mile hill, you could have a brake fade problem because the fluid boiled.
Yeah.
So it is a good idea to change it. A lot of shops and people don't think they need to do it or just ignore it, but it is a good thing to do.
Okay.
And what was the other question?
The other question was the rotation of the rotors.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, turning the rotors.
Yeah.
That used to be a really common procedure. You would machine the rotor surfaces, preventing the customer from having to buy new ones because they started out life being very expensive. Now rotors are way down on price, so sometimes it doesn't pay to machine them because you have to remove sometimes so much metal to get them back to normal that they're almost at their minimum or below. So now they're too thin. They can't dissipate the heat, so you're really not doing any justice to the braking system.
Okay.
So a lot of times you just replace them.
Fair enough. Let's go to Ann in Chester. Ann, you're on.
Yes. I have a question. I have a F-250 04, and when I start it up, it idles nicely for about 3 minutes, and then it starts to shake and just run rough, and then I'll drive it for about, when I start out, put my foot on the pedal, the gas, it kind of hesitates a little bit, and then I really give it some gas, drive up a hill with it, maybe drive about a mile or two, and then let it sit and idle, and it idles fine.
So your misfiring or your skipping seems to be on load. In other words, when you go to move the vehicle to accelerate or get going, that's when you're getting all the shuddering.
No.
No?
No, it has started before that.
It'll okay, but when you're trying to move it, is it even worse? Is it you feeling it kind of jerking and bucking along?
You're not feeling it worse. You're feeling it about the same.
Yeah. Is your check engine light flashing during this whole event?
No, the check engine light doesn't come on.
Huh.
You mean
it came on once for about a half hour, and I just happened to be near a mechanic who put one of those things on it, and it read the O2 sensor.
Mm-hmm.
But it went off. It's never come on again.
Wow. Now, does the light still light up before you start the engine? In other words, does the check engine light come on as a test and then go out after the engine's running?
Yes.
Okay, because it's important that if that bulb burns out, you've got code information and potential trouble, but you don't know it because the light's not coming on.
Uh-huh.
So in that case, I would still get this scanned with that type of a scanner that you spoke about. And sometimes you've got to go a little deeper and not read it in the generic mode of the machine, but go into the manufacturer mode, and that'll pull up some information that you may not normally get. But it's got to be diagnosed because that rough running could be from a variety of reasons.
Well, I brought it to the dealer, and they were scratching their head. They changed the fuel filter. They said, "Oh, it's not running rough today."
Oh,
so,
boy.
You know, I mean, they kept it there. They kept it there for a week. And they said, well, don't drive it too far from home. And then, that's not helping me.
Well, no. You don't want to stay too close to home. You know, you want to go somewhere once in a while.
That's right.
Yeah, exactly. Well, so, so they just sent it home.
Well, this is what you could try, which is only of good benefit. May not help anything, but gas additives. Put some stuff in the gas.
Yeah, I did. I put Lucas in, and I put stuff to treat the ethanol. I did all that. And some days, I'd say probably out of 10 days, two of those days, it acts fine.
Wow.
Go ahead.
That's just one of those things. You got to catch it failing, and that's a hard thing to do.
I'm sorry to say we're out of time, Ann, but thank you for calling. And thanks to everybody who called in. And thanks to Gordon Fricke of Barber and Fricke in Hoosick Falls. Another great job. It looks like, a full bank of calls again. And we're sorry if we left you on the line. Support comes from Lexington Vacuum, Albany, New York, featuring Miele, Simplicity, Dyson, Electrolux, Vapori, Vapor Cleaning, Sales, Service, Repairs, LEXIVAC.com. Foresight Land Services, Pittsfield, Massachusetts, for 45 years, offering civil engineering, land surveying, land planning, and environmental permitting to private and municipal clients in the Berkshires and Eastern New York, foresightland.com. The Preservation League of New York State, Albany, New York, protecting New York's historic buildings, districts, and landscapes since 1974. PreserveNYS.org. And Binny Water Ice and Spring Water, Kingston. Pure spring water, coffee service at Mountain Valley Spring Water, delivered to homes and offices, local and family-owned. BinnyWater.com. That's it. Thanks to Kimber Lipscomb, who handled the controls. Patrick Garrett answered the phones today. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein. Marshall, thanks again to Gordon Fricke. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, Moyers and Company. Next week, Medical Monday, Alan Chartok welcomes orthopedic Dr. Jahan Shen. Stay tuned now for a news update.